The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into our final bonus show for the year, I just want to remind you, kids, remember, all we are is just another brick in the slats. Gary.
Well, I'm doing my due diligence here.
Are you?
Yeah. Look, even though this is our last show before we're out of here for the Christmas holiday, mm-hmm. we must still do all the intense research and
really
due diligence that we do for every other show.
And
the debate that I saw yesterday on social media, the one that I texted to you when we got into a little texting thing in the afternoon yesterday, it wasn't like Tuesday.
No, it was brief.
It was brief, but I lost it when on social media, the debate between Walz supporters, all right, these are people that are Walz supporters, is a slat a wall?
Oh, no. Here we go.
And, you really can't talk about this without putting the tone of the people on social media. Yeah. You have to have I think it's necessary to have the tone, because I read tone into it.
Right.
And the tone would be like, a slat isn't a wall. And no, it's not a wall. No. I mean, what's the whole thing about the aesthetics and the see-through? It's going to be a steel slat wall, and a wall is a wall, and a slat wall can be a wall.
Well, it you can see through it, much like bars in a prison cell, which is certainly going to appeal to the Democrats.
So we had to look at the definition of it.
All right.
Slat, because that's, I believe that everybody talks about you told me what was the word of the year the other day?
Justice.
And you and I went, what? No, it's now slats, because it is, when I put slats into Google, it came up trending now.
Mm.
So it is trending, because a lot of people have been trying to figure out, you know, what a slat is, since the administration announced, the president announced the slat and the aesthetic beauty of it. A slat is a thin, narrow piece of wood, plastic, or metal, especially one of a series that overlap or fit into each other, as in a fence or a Venetian blind.
Now, will these overlap or fit into each other? I was told you can see through them. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not a slat builder. I've never been much of a slat guy. I had some slat people in our family. I was doing my history of the whole family tree thing, and we had some slat people in the family tree, but I'm not one of them.
So there you go. If you wondered what, because I'm sure a lot of people were. Now, we did, because when the president tweeted that the other day.
Right.
We wondered
where he was going with it.
Well, if you go to the Drudge Report, you see it all, that's actually his. Let me just see if he's changed the headline yet, but it was definitely a slat headline. It was Fight for Steel Slats is the lead on Drudge.
Yeah.
My. What a day. Hey, you said it when we started our pre-show meeting.
What's that?
Normally, the week before Christmas, we are fighting for any type of important story.
Yes.
I mean, it is a beatdown normally the week before Christmas. It's just things, most of the time, things aren't happening. And man, are there a lot of things happening. Coming up, the House passes the CR until February with $5 billion for the wall. Defense Secretary Mattis quits over Syria.
Bye.
The president is quote, at this moment, end of quote, ready to close down the government. I forgot who, I put that in quotes because somebody put that in, was it Ann Coulter? Can't remember who did it.
Mm.
No, she responded to the Washington Post article.
Okay.
That said, that had the president is at this moment ready to close down the government, and then Ann Coulter commented on it and put, oh, wow, the first spine transplant.
Like,
whoa.
First successful spine transplant.
Spine transplant.
Love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Trump orders troop reduction in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive Christmas carols tailored to fight climate change. There's a progressive church that is out there. I may even have some of the Christmas carols that they're singing, but there's Christmas carols tailored to fight climate change.
Okay.
End of the year wrap up. DNC scheduled for 32 primary debates. That's what came out of that. Plus all of your calls and comments here. It was funny because. Yeah, you came in and you said, there goes our Christmas show.
Yeah, we were going to do a Christmas show, Mr. President. Come on, what the heck? You look at the discussions, and there were many on Thursday, and one of them was about the fact that, well, they can get a slat fence slash wall done a lot cheaper. That must have been introduced to, that idea must have been discovered earlier this week, right before the president tweeted it. Because it, if you think about the whole $25 billion, and remember the prototypes? Remember he went to California?
Right.
Which was just as historic as sitting down with North Korea. Because California let him come in.
It was.
I mean, it
was a huge story.
It was a huge story.
Yeah.
He went out there to look at the prototypes. And there were a number of the prototypes, right? And I don't know exactly the materials of all of them, but many of them clearly made with cement, with concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he tweeted the other day, not concrete, slats. It's going to be beautiful. You can see right through them. It'll be beautiful. And the first thing I thought, you mean like jail cells, slats, the bars? So, anyway, the conversation started, today was about the deal to be made, possibly, right? I think it was Mark Meadows said, no, I think Chuck Schumer's a deal maker after the House passed it tonight. I think he's a deal maker, but without the wall, funded, without the $5.7 billion in that Senate version, of course, it's not going to be signed. And it's really not expected that Schumer's going to offer up anything more than what they had before.
Are they even going to vote on it? I have not seen.
Well,
I've not seen the Senate called back yet. When they have to come back, they give them 24 hours to come back, and I haven't heard that come out yet. And so at this point tomorrow, it's.
I follow one of our reporters, Bob Costantini, from Westwood One on Westwood One News on Twitter. And he tweeted, that they possibly, and this was before the House passed it, that there is a chance that they would be called back. But I think we kind of all knew that. And maybe just that we hadn't considered it, that they could be called back on Friday in order to vote. My question is, do they all show up?
Well,
Does Jeff Flake show up?
Well, the whole point is, if it's they give them 24 hours, so there won't be a vote on Friday.
Right. It wouldn't happen.
Because
there would be a shutdown, which means it would go into Saturday,
right.
And then they could reopen the government, theoretically, if they passed it, which they won't. But they were talking about, the conversation started, veering towards this, the slats will be cheaper, much cheaper than a wall. And I thought, okay, but no numbers are being floated. So clearly they're trying to work or crunch numbers there in the administration. Maybe the OMB, throwing some numbers around to say, okay, in fact, the acting chief of staff is from the OMB. So maybe that's where that came from. I don't know. We don't have any information or any numbers, but they were throwing that around, and in offering up, I guess, possibilities of what kind of deal could be made in the Senate. I don't think there's any deal to be made. I don't think Schumer is going to budge. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, the president could offer up a number of things here. Now, they attached, you know, some things to it, including $8 billion in natural disaster aid. Okay? So the idea is that, and they do this quite often inside the Beltway, you attach something, you know, attach a helpless baby to it is what they call it, or what some have called it, which means attach something that they're going to have to vote against when they vote against it, which would be $8 billion, which some of that money, a large portion of that money would go to disaster relief for the wildfires in California. And so the question is, does that budge a Chuck Schumer? Well, very few news agencies are reporting on that part of it.
Well,
so I don't think that's going to be enough.
I don't think it will, because no. The House then, under the Democrats, can institute the same bill when they get in 2 weeks and simply say we want $20 billion for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then say we'll cover that when we, you know, when we get back, and we'll be introducing a bill. What it would be 12 days from now. We'll introduce the bill 12 days from now.
Yeah.
You know, we've always said the biggest problem is the president. The president has been inconsistent on this, as we all know, just in the past couple of days. I mean, just this morning, how it was bounced around, the different things that he was saying, where when they interviewed even Republican senators afterwards, they said, we have no idea. We have no idea where this president is going. He changes his mind. He changes the narrative every couple of moments. You and I said, though, one of the last things we said before we get out of here yesterday was the pro-wall conservative media, and I'm talking about like Drudge and Ann Coulter and Michelle Malcolm and others who were just livid over the president's flip-flop, on the wall. And then what I believe that they saw, and we mentioned the tweet, you know, that the slats and everything else, and aesthetically, that just drove conservatives up, the pro-wall conservatives, right up the wall. It just drove them crazy, which is why you heard the type of blunt rhetoric I believe that you got. But I also believe they said, look, if we're going to, we know this president is reactionary, and if we, and we know that they saw it, that's why they unfollowed or whatever, blocked Ann Coulter. I don't know how you do it on Twitter, but they did one of those. I don't know whether it's because they didn't want the president to see it. I don't know whether the president did it. Who knows who actually did it? But you and I said that the pro-wall folks in the media, that they know that the president reads, for example, Drudge. I mean, it was just, Mr. President, this is in your face. Mm-hmm. Democrats are making a fool out of you. And that was coming from, as I said, when we read the Drudge headline that stayed on, what was it? It was over 24 hours. And most headlines on Drudge do not stay on that long. And it was the fact that, you know, Trump backs off on the wall while Mexico gets $4.8 billion for their security and their fencing and their slats slash wall. And you and I both had the same reaction to it. We said, are they trying to get a reaction? Do they look at it and say the only way that we have, the only chance that we have is to infuriate him? But the fact is, he can't go after us because he's the one that promised it. Because as you and I noticed, that Trump really didn't respond. He didn't respond to the Drudge headline. He didn't respond to Ann Coulter. He didn't respond to Michelle Malcolm. He didn't respond to any of the pro-wall and normally pro-Trump media people out there, as they were just tearing him a new blankety-blank. And so you and I said, we wouldn't be surprised. Before we got out of here yesterday, we said, we wouldn't be surprised if the president comes out tomorrow and says, nope, going to close the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
because the tone changed. I think the turning point was when you had Kellyanne Conway.
Oh,
basically when she said, "Look, I understand. We understand why people are upset," which means they're hearing it. And that was acknowledgement that they were talking about it, which means they were concerned about it.
Well, it's so sensitive right now that when the president came out and said he won't accept anything except, you know, money for border security, mm-hmm. and the pro-Trump, pro-wall people went crazy again. They said, mm-hmm. it's not border security, it's right. a wall.
Right.
And then he made it clear later on he meant the wall, but there's like a trying to pull teeth, trying to get him, the pro-Trump, pro-wall people, trying to just lead him to where they thought he was, and they did. They got him back to it. By the end of the day, by the end of the afternoon, he was back to the wall talk again. Mm-hmm. But it was like, that was part of the humor of it. There's humor in everything. There was humor because they were just, every time he'd say something, it's like, well, no, you're not where you were before. It's not money for border security. It's money for the wall.
Here's a question. Does it get done? Does he ever get $5.7 billion? I don't think so. How long can you shut the government down?
The only way he, as we have stated, the only way he gets it if he's willing to do DACA, and maybe even the Mark Thiessen column that we read earlier this week, if he's willing to give legal status, solve the illegal immigrants in this country problem, that but he hasn't used that as a bargaining chip at this point. But that's the only way that I could see him getting there.
And who knows? I mean, I don't know what the negotiation would be. I guess I don't know what the talks would be, or if Schumer is even open to any negotiation, any offer.
At this moment, I would say no, because they wouldn't want to give Trump the victory. I think they will keep it closed until at least the Democrats get in. And then it was like, okay, it was the Democrats, you know, the Democrat leadership of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats that got this deal done with the president. Mm-hmm. To the point where it might be a deal that the Senate wouldn't pass, even though they have more Republicans in it. It could be the opposite.
Well, Chuck Schumer, I mean, it was just a few hours ago. Chuck Schumer says, ain't going to happen in the Senate.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We've got a lot to talk about here.
Man, do we have a lot to talk about this morning, mm-hmm. so I guess we won't have any Christmas things.
Yeah, we will.
We will?
Yeah, we will.
Did you bring some booze?
No, but I have some Christmas stuff we can talk about.
Oh, great.
Climate change Christmas carols.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Many areas in the east and along the eastern seaboard have already had a record amount of rainfall for the year, and we're going to tack on at least another couple inches with the system that's moving through that region for today and into the weekend. Those widespread showers will continue again today for most areas that saw the showers yesterday, east of the Mississippi, Indiana, Ohio, down through Kentucky, and into the lower Mississippi Valley. Heavy showers expected. Up and down the I-95 corridor, we'll see showers continue through at least Saturday morning from Washington, D.C. into Boston. And expect more snowfall for Idaho, the Northern Rockies, and Cascades. A record-breaking 112.5 million Americans will travel during this December holiday season. That's a 4.4% increase over last year, according to AAA, the highest number since they've been tracking holiday travel. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Walking in a Winter Wonderland. Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Ron in Jacksonville, Florida. Ron, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Hey, the only point I wanted to make was that I think Trump may have success in the Senate, because when they had that three-way mini battle the other day, Nancy Pelosi said, "You don't have the votes in the House." And Trump goes, "I do have the votes in the House, Nancy." Well, I think there are things going on in the world, perhaps with Syria in the pullout, that will make Chuck Schumer negotiate a deal.
Okay. But there wasn't one Democrat in the House that voted for it. Not
right,
one.
Here's the point, Ron. When she said that, we said on the air, yeah, they do have the votes.
Mm-hmm.
She was wrong. They always had the votes in the House. They were all Republican votes. In the Senate right now, you probably don't have Jeff Flake's vote. He's not going to agree to it as he's exiting that seat. So you don't. So that takes you now. You're at 50-50. And Susan Collins already was quoted yesterday as saying, "We can't shut down the government under any circumstance." So you may not even have all the Republicans aboard, which means you may only be able to get to 49, and you have to get to 60 votes, which means 10 Democrats have to cross. You didn't have one Democrat cross in the House. So Nancy Pelosi was wrong when she said that, because there were numerous media outlets that said they've got the votes. Obviously, they have the votes in the House for the $5.7 billion. They just don't have it in the Senate.
Very good. I understood.
Okay. Right. Thanks,
Ron.
No, because you're right, though, because I understand you thinking that, because they were saying that, and Nancy Pelosi did say it. You didn't have the vote in the House. He says, "Yes, I do, Nancy," because he did. He knew he had it. I believe it was the Wall Street Journal that had quoted the day before by saying they've got the votes in the House.
Mm-hmm.
They have it in the House. They're very sure that they have it in the House. Or was it maybe it was, I can't remember, it was Wall Street Journal or The Hill that, you know, they always are doing the whip counts out there.
And the president was clear about that in that meeting. Yeah. He kept saying it. Yeah, but we don't have it in the Senate, so that's where we need. We need the 60 votes in the Senate, and we can't get that without you guys. And so, you know, the only, I guess, real effect is that Pelosi isn't dancing in a bar. If she is, it's for another reason.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where this heads. I mean, we are where we were a week ago, and now it started, and now it's already starting. Who will get blamed for the shutdown?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we disagreed with Trump coming out and saying, "I'll be proud to shut down the government," because the Democrats can simply run ad after ad. Every single media outlet can run the president saying, "I'm proud to shut the government down." And who the country blames for the shutdown is almost always the party that crumbles first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the Democrats doing it. I do think that you might see when Pelosi is in power. I do believe that if you're going to see a compromise, it would be the fact that they would want DACA and legal status for illegal immigration,
right,
for illegal immigrants in the country. They might even go for citizenship. You started citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
A path to citizenship. If you want the wall, we'll give you the $5.7 billion. You can claim victory. We want all illegal immigrants legalized. And again, I don't know how badly the president wants the wall. I can't tell you.
Right.
You know, we've gone through the whole discussion. We've gone through everything that, you know, with the people raising the YouTube money. And by the way, I saw a lot on social media.
The GoFundMe money.
What'd I say?
YouTube.
The GoFundMe. Thank you very much.
There might be some YouTube money. Did we think about that?
There was a lot of the GoFundMe talk yesterday. You can use private money. Private money's been used to build memorials and private money. Yeah, with the permission of Congress. Mm-hmm. You still need the permission. Congress still would allocate that money. And if you even read from the vet, he said we would have to get a deal from the government that this money would only be used for the wall. If we can't get that guarantee from the government, all money will be refunded.
Well, there was and they said on the GoFundMe page, there's a congressman that's introducing a bill that would create a savings bond that would be only about funding the wall. Well,
right.
That means you still have to go back to Congress.
You have to go back to Congress, which means you would have to go through this House, which we settle, which the new House, which will be Nancy Pelosi.
And they're not going to, the Republicans are not going to stay in session for something like that. They're not going to stay till the end of the year to pass something like that.
No. So, you know, we talked about the president, day one as president, should have brought in all the leadership, all the leadership of the Republicans, the leaders of the Democrats, and on a consistent basis say, we are going to improve border security.
Mm-hmm.
Slats, walls, more Border Patrol agents. We will fight sanctuary cities. We will deport quicker. I'm missing
E-Verify.
E-Verify, yes. Yes, thank you very much. I knew I was missing one thing. Hey, I'm on vacation already. E-Verify, and you build consensus. That's how you get legislation passed. How did they get the tax cuts passed? The president was absolutely consistent all along in what he wanted, and he built a coalition of Republicans behind him.
Yep.
And got a tax cut that you and I believe that no other Republican, there would never be a Democrat, but no other Republican who won the presidency could have done. I don't care whether you were a Ted Cruz person in the primary. I don't care who you supported. Nobody would have got that done. And he did it by what? Being consistent on the message and building a coalition and meeting with the leadership of Congress on a consistent basis to push it forward. You don't win legislation by last-minute tweets. And you don't win legislation by constantly changing your mind, setting ultimatums, and then backing off on them, as he has over the past year on this, year and a half on this.
Well, and him being blunt and truthful would in this, and very, I think, short and sweet on this, could have been a very effective and simple process. Every day, tweeting, they're not giving me the funding. Folks, you need to call your congressman. They're not giving me the funding.
Right.
They're not giving me the funding. We need to build this wall.
Well,
they're not giving me the funding.
And the other thing is, and we didn't mention it yesterday, but we mentioned it a lot last week if you listen to the show. I believe that the debate was focused on the wrong thing. What you first do is, before you talk about the specific solution, as in a wall, you have to get the country on your side with the big picture, which is Democrats are for open borders. This really isn't, I don't believe it is, this isn't a fight about whether to have a wall or not have a wall. This is actually a fight that we're having as to whether you want border security in general or open borders that the Democrats want. I believe, and you and I had a great discussion on this last week, that we believe that that is something that the Republicans and the administration should have backed them into the corner. And once you have won that clearly, then you move forward with the border security, the slats, the fence, enforcement and legislation to ensure that E-Verify is slam dunk,
mm-hmm.
The removal of any illegal immigrant from welfare benefits in this country. That's what you do.
And I don't think you really, again, have to, you don't have, again, it's a simple process. You don't have to go very far because the American people are already on your side on border security. They are.
Yep.
The one thing that's, again, we talked about during the just the other day, during the 2016 election cycle, we called on the president to be specific on a number of items. But then he got too specific, I think, on the wall. You don't have to make those promises. You don't have to go as far as to say it's going to be exactly this. Now, you can say we've got to reinforce the border. I believe we need a wall. I believe, unless someone convinces me otherwise, a wall is the only way to go. But it started out with, we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. not only was it too specific, but it was a promise that could not ever be kept. Without Peña Nieto at the time standing on stage with him going, yeah, we'll pay for it. I mean, that wasn't going to happen, but it didn't need to be said. That's the problem. There's no need to overpromise in this case. If you're talking about one of your resorts, you can include all the hyperbole you want and say it's going to be the best resort in the world. Great. When you're talking about coming in from private sector to president, an unprecedented move, then and people are trusting you, you already have the trust. You already have the built-in support. And you already own that topic. In 2016, he owned border security like nobody's owned it in years. So I guess it goes back to the, when someone tells you, oh, whoa, slow down, you're working too hard there. You're going, basically, you don't need to go that far. That's exactly what he did. You don't need to keep talking. Your support base is already there. They're already in front of you cheering. You don't need to tell them to cheer. Jeb Bush needs to say, please clap. You don't. and honestly, I said yesterday or earlier this week, where's the reset button? I don't know if this is a reset button or not. It could be for a number of the and we're talking about the staunch supporters that were in it to win it from the beginning. Many of them going back to pre-2015, many of them probably going back to 2011 when he didn't actually even run or ever announce that he was going to run in 2012. So, again, that remains to be seen. We'll see that here in a couple of years. But this, he's going to have to, his tactics are going to have to be different going forward. It's not that he even has to get the $5.7
billion. Well, I think, and again, the president's been all over the place over the last week with, whether he wants the wall or not. And we've seen the response. The response from the leadership of the pro-wall contingent. One thing that, and I don't know if the president still realizes or not, and you and I talked about this, that the people that want the wall don't care if the government shut down.
Right.
There may be a significant portion of America that does. They weren't. You and I have talked about this many times, that one of the demographics that voted for Trump were the ones that just wanted to destroy both parties.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the Republican Party. They wanted to, and we know, they called the show and told us that our whole thing is just destroy what's up there right now. Destroy the swamp. That was more important than actually getting particular issues done. But there's a significant portion about that doesn't care if the government shut down. They don't care. They want the wall. Now, even if they get the $5.7 billion and they get a continuing resolution that goes on through the next year, that's still roughly a fifth of the money that he requested to build the wall.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So will it ever get built in 2 years? No.
No, the wall won't. No, definitely. Will the $5.7 get done in 2 years? I have my doubts.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up on the top of the hour, the Defense Secretary, Mad Dog Mattis, resigning. Obviously, if you've read the letter, does not like the direction that the president is going in. Wall Street Journal said he did it because of Syria. And also now the president, Wall Street Journal reporting, will be pulling troops, at least half the troops, out of Afghanistan.
And that story broke just shortly after it was announced that Mattis was leaving.
And the reports are Trump didn't warn anybody.
Right.
Nobody knew this was coming.
Right.
He just woke up one day, we're pulling out of Syria.
Right.
And it's, And we'll get into talking about it here. One of the things is, you know, we always hear we shouldn't be the world's policemen. That always happens. But mm-hmm. then we pull out of somewhere and we end up back in there anyway, because as you and I said, after 9/11 and when we were going into Iraq, if you want to go into these countries, if you're going to be a part of it, you have to stay in for generations.
Well,
probably
because,
at least two generations. We saw we had to do that in Japan. We had to do that in Europe.
And especially with the way that ISIS is much better organized in Syria.
Yes.
People making the case, you know, that support the president and his move here, saying, well, ISIS has been diminished. Well, keep in mind, they have state sponsorship from Iran. We also have a concern with Russia when it comes to Syria. There's reason for our presence aside from ISIS.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. All right, you ready for a Christmas carol here?
Sure.
Yeah. All right, now, it's not your normal Christmas carol.
Oh.
All right, I want to make this clear. This comes from Australia, all right? And it is from the Pitt Street United Church Singers.
Okay.
They describe themselves as the congregation as a progressive faith community of justice. So they have rewritten Christmas carols in the form of climate change carols. Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Silent Night, and get ready for their rendition here coming up of Joy to the World. I'll read you the lyrics. You ready?
All right.
Cool down the world, the time has come for targets tight and fair. Let petrol, oil, and coal prepare to go. Let's fund renewables. Are you ready?
Okay.
Right, here we go.
Cool down the world, the time has come for targets tight and fair. With petrol, oil, and coal, prepare to go. Let's fund renewables.
Okay.
My head hurts.
All right.
There you go.
You know, because that's going to change everything. Well, they sang a Christmas carol about it.
Well, not only do they sing a Christmas carol, but they sang a Christmas carol in a church that has to be heated. It's a huge, big church, too. So, of course, it had to be heated. They're using microphones and phones and amplification, which means what? They need electricity in order to sing their Christmas carols to get rid of petrol, oil, and coal, which I bet you is where the majority of their power comes from to begin with.
Well, if they're a church, they can raise their own funds and fund renewables to, you know, take their church off the grid. Wouldn't you start there?
Yeah,
right?
I would, yeah.
You know, pass around the plate. I'm not joking. I mean, then set the example. Instead, what they're saying is that they should go out and take everyone else's money. We'll set the example.
There's the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change group that put together a songbook called Carols Against Coal.
Okay.
Wow.
What, are you going to stand in front of the coal industry and stand outside a coal plant or something? And
well, it sort of destroys
sing.
It sort of destroys the whole Christmas Carol thing, because remember they were using, you had to have Bob Cratchit go out and get, you know, the coal heater that they had, whatever.
Right. Yeah,
I forgot what the term he used that they needed to get, remember?
Right.
The coal scuttle.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is a coal scuttle of a different kind. So here's what I guess I'm wondering is, do they not see Antifa and all these radicals singing? Singing? No, 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 no. You're supposed to put on masks and destroy property and hurt people and shame people. Singing's not going to get it done.
Some of the other groups in Australia, climate change groups, have rewritten other Christmas carols, like Away in a Coal Mine.
Okay.
O Come Renewables.
All right.
And another version of Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Hush, Our Solar Panels Sit.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I told you I'd have some Christmas stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's not Christmas stuff, but okay. Yeah.
You don't consider it Christmas stuff, huh?
No.
All right. Let's, in all seriousness, let's get to the president talking about the wall.
All right.
Yesterday, okay? Here we go. Here's
right,
a few
here
audio cuts here. All right.
We'll be working on that, Mitch and Paul and Kevin and everybody, and we'll see what we can do. But hopefully that'll all come together.
I've already started building the wall. We built large sections, and we're fixing up a lot of other sections that are a mess. But the fact is, we need the wall. The Democrats know it. Everybody knows it. We have to build the wall. It will get built. We're going to complete it. A lot of progress has been made. Watch what happens.
There you go.
Yeah, all right.
Large portions of the wall have already been built. That's news to me.
No, we do have a barrier, a fence that pre-existed, but it's not.
No, he's talking
new
about
construction.
Right, he's talking about his wall.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Okay. So.
And we do have many areas that have a fence. We don't have anything that's newly built. We have the reconstruction of stuff that came from budgets before. That was already, again, that's the maintenance budget. That's not what he wants. He wants the $25
billion. Right. And look, I understand where those Trump supporters who were so furious, even right now, very, very suspicious as to what the president is going to do. You still have some getting some response. They still believe this is a masterful, genius negotiating ploy by Trump. But those are a lot few and far between as to what we might have seen 6 months ago.
Well, and I saw somebody into the evening a few hours ago posting, he'll convince me when he actually gets the deal done. Let's see if he shuts the government down first. And so...
Right.
You know, they're not convinced, they're not back at the table yet in terms of the support. I do believe he'll shut the government down.
Yeah, I don't know, again, like, for example, Syria. Nobody can really figure out, there hasn't been much analysis on it because nobody can figure out where that came from,
mm-hmm.
from the president, except
it didn't
for the
come
fact,
from his defense secretary,
right,
we know that.
Except for the fact, as you said, him, it seems like he changed his mind after talking to Turkey's president last week.
Well, and there's the timing of it all. Because if you go back 6 months, he said, we're going to review it and in 6 months, and we'll make a decision then. But review means that you bring in your national security advisor, which he may have done. We don't know that because we haven't heard from him. But you certainly bring in your defense secretary. Now, there well could have been a conversation that didn't go too well in terms of what Mattis wanted. That's quite possible. But by all accounts, many people were out of the loop from his inner circle. If that's accurate, if that's true, then essentially they were learning it via Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Wall Street Journal broke the story. I believe that was before the tweet, if memory serves, nearly 48 hours ago. But so the word had already gotten out that it was going to happen, that the announcement was going to come down.
But I just wonder whether he was, again, we don't know where his head has been at this last few days when it seemed as if they reversed course completely, because he never, this is the really interesting thing, as everybody knows, I mean, there's a certain pattern that Trump has. If you attack him, he's going to attack you back. After Sarah Huckabee Sanders made her statement on Tuesday, for two full days, he was just blasted by every pro-wall, pro-Trump person in the media out there. And he really never responded with the same fury that he normally does, which just brought more anger out of the pro-wall, pro-Trump folks. And you and I were having this discussion, even part of it last hour. One of the demographics of who voted for this president, that some of his most loyal supporters, they never have cared about the government shutting down. They expected that's what Trump was going to do, because one of the problems is they believe that the swamp, as they call it, we've heard swamp being referred more to Congress this week than it has in a very, very long time, because it sort of morphed and evolved from Congress into the deep state and the bureaucracy inside the FBI, Department of Justice, and intelligence agencies. But now it's back to Congress again as it evolves back again to, you know, more members of Congress. But and we've had heard a few people say, well, it's the Republicans' fault, not Trump's fault. It's Trump's promise.
Yeah, right.
The Republicans weren't promoting that. Trump was promoting that. And so that was from the very, very beginning. Since Congress didn't do it, shut the whole government down. Get the wall or shut the government down. And there are two things. On social media yesterday, I saw a lot of people saying, well, Trump supporters never really cared about Mexico paying for it. I'm here to tell you, and I'm sure Eric will verify it for me, for a full year and a half, it was nonstop Trump supporters telling us that Mexico was going to pay for it, however they were going to pay for it. So it was an issue for Trump supporters. We know, because we talk to them every single day for over a year. So we know. We communicated with them, and they wanted the wall or shut the government down. And I don't know whether he didn't realize that. I have no idea where his head went after he had the statement with Pelosi and Schumer. The one thing that you and I said made us feel very uncomfortable is when he was making great strides and great points against Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, he volunteered the statement twice. Well, I know we're all for border security. Well, that infuriated me, because that is the crux of the argument. They aren't for border security. The party wants open borders. Don't give them an out. And what I viewed as a masterful performance of the president was completely destroyed when he said, well, we know we're all for border security. Yes, Mr. President, we are. Well, you just stated that the opposition that is not for border security, that is for open borders, is something that they are not. You can't fight them that way.
Well, because I would have said, I know we're all for getting rid of sanctuary policy, right?
Yeah, if you're going to ask that question, that's what you ask.
I know none of us here are for keeping sanctuary city policy and sanctuary state policy in place, right?
Yeah, so there's where we're at right now.
Because if you're truly about border security, you can't possibly want sanctuary policy. And that would have been the brilliant follow-up. Oh, yes, Mr. President, we're for border security. So that and we all agree that getting rid of sanctuary policy is one of the first things we have to do, right? No. Oh, I thought you were for border security.
Yeah, if you're going to set them up, fine, but it was just a general statement. We're all for border security.
Well,
no, they're not.
And I just pointed that out because it is so easy.
Yeah.
You talk about tripping someone hard, that would have been it.
And you already had him off their game. You saw Schumer. You could see
it. Yeah.
He was extremely uncomfortable.
Well, the way he moved and was shaking his head, the look on his face, you're talking about a guy who was clearly disturbed in that moment.
It's always bothered us that the Republicans and even the president have not realized. Well, okay, they might have realized it, but they don't market it, is that it's a secure border versus open borders.
Right.
There aren't nuances. That's the whole thing that we have talked about. What's the difference between a triple fence, a slat, and a wall?
Right.
What's the difference? Nancy Pelosi said a wall is immoral. Well, wait a minute. You were for tough border security, and you voted for fencing. Major fence. So what? What's the... Tear their argument apart. But it's always been framed as the wall or no wall. Instead of getting America by your side by pointing out and accusing and winning the argument that the Democrats are for open borders, at that point, once you have won that rhetorical debate, then you can move on to a whole bunch of different things and build a consensus within your party.
Well, because you clearly had them on the ropes. They kept saying they did not want to discuss it. And of course they don't. So stay at them, corner them, and force them to say that they're for open borders. And it's not that hard.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on top issues facing commercial drivers. Smartphones impact our lives in so many positive ways. But for commercial motor vehicle drivers sharing the road with passenger vehicles, they can often mean more highway accidents, as paying attention to the phone sometimes takes precedence over staying focused on the road. That's why distracted driving is fourth on the list of top drivers' concerns in 2018, according to the American Transportation Research Institute. It's impossible for you to control what other vehicles are doing on the road, but that doesn't mean you can't do your part to contribute to safety on the roads. Remember, when you see or hear a text alert on your phone, FMCSA regulations prohibit you from answering or responding to it until your CMV is stopped. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So what now? I did find on the Hill.com filing that they said the Senate is scheduled to reconvene at noon tomorrow.
Right.
I can only find it in the Hill. I just went to CNN. They said is expected to schedule a vote on Friday. And this story is just from like 8 o'clock last night.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hill story said they are scheduled to be back in session again. How many people will be there? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because
I don't know if a Jeff Flake returns. You're not going to get his vote anyway. The Republicans aren't going to get his vote. So, you'll get maybe 50. That's if Collins is on board.
To begin debate, McConnell needs 50 senators to vote to advance the measure.
In roll call, what does he need? Two. I don't know what the number is in roll call. He would have to do, in order to advance, he's going to have to hit 50.
Right. He needs 50 to advance and then 60. And if you've got Flake, you're at 50-50 right there, depending on how many senators show up.
Right.
They don't know how many senators will show up.
So if they don't have a showing,
half of them were gone.
Then he won't be able to proceed with it.
No, he wouldn't even be able to proceed because it doesn't matter. It's not the majority of people that are there.
Right.
You still need that 50 to advance the bill, and then you need 60 to break the Democrat filibuster. And at that point, the president would sign that if hypothetically you got to that point. But I'm sure they don't have Flake. And Susan Collins said, no, don't want to shut down the government under any circumstances, which means you don't even reach 49. There's not going to be one Democrat senator vote on that.
Right.
And so at that point, then they could say, okay, let's try to compromise and come up with the bill with the House, or just pass the bill that the Senate passed last week and send that back to the House. So who knows?
It's Gary and Eric, who knows where they're headed, on Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, in other stories out there, because after today's show, we're out of here for Christmas, so we got to make sure we cover all the stories that will be old. Stories are old 5 minutes after they come out now. So,
yeah, so these are old stories because we've been on for 90 minutes.
Exactly. From newsbusters.org, female tennis great, feminist, and gay rights activist Martina Navratilova criticized current transgender policies in sports, stating, quote, "You can't just proclaim yourself a female and be able to compete against women," end of quote. Navratilova, long considered to be the greatest female tennis player of all time and one of the first openly gay sports figures, engaged in a Twitter debate prompted by a BBC Sports Writer article about criticism leveled at trans athletes who compete at a high level. The writer posted the article titled, "Transgender Women in Sports: Are They Really a Threat to Female Sport?" And captured it with a tweet lamenting the 100,000 hate messages received by cyclist Dr. Rachel McKinnon since winning her world master's title in October. The prevailing message that the writer was pushing is that those who think it's unfair for men to become women and compete in sports are encumbered by some sort of misunderstanding. However, and I love how this is written, however, tennis star Navratilova, who was once one of the, quote, "wokest," end of quote, high-profile figures of her time, was brave enough to confront the narrative. She tweeted in response to the BBC article, stating clearly, "That can't be right. You just can't proclaim yourself a female and be able to compete against women."
Yeah, right. You can't. Oh, wait. No. That's perfectly allowed. It's 2018. What are you thinking?
Well, look, this is something that we predicted a few years back. because it was easy to figure out. And it has fit into the narrative that of what we've always said the Democrats are becoming and the left is becoming is a bigger pie of victims every day. And when you become a bigger pie of victims, then you have to become a bigger pie of oppressors. And then eventually you start attacking those that were the leadership of the modern, if you want to look at the new modern liberal movement over the last 20, 30 years. In this country. And we said, you're eventually going to have feminists come out and state that if any man can be a woman, feminism is dead. And that's what's happening now. And you're going to have the left fighting with each other on a consistent basis, just like the narrative of being transracial, that anybody can be whatever race they wish to have. As we have stated on the show many times before, if anyone can be whatever they wish to be at any time, then the Civil Rights Amendment is dead.
Well, that's it, because in that it created protected classes. So, well, I'm part of the protected class. Well, no, you're not. Yeah, I am. Because I say so, I am. And you can't deny that. So there are no protected classes, because anybody can be a part of one just by saying it.
I love this end of it. It should be interesting to see if Martina Navratilova's activism stops here, considering that her Tuesday tweet represents a worldview that many radical LGBTQers have now deemed transphobic.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, that Martina Navratilova is now transphobic. And as we said, and we said this a long time ago, that when that you had gay activists that even said including transgenders is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have that also. And that debate will just grow stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. But the main thing that we look at is, you know, the liberal feminism that exists today no longer can exist, because you have gone from being women that believe that they're feminist and believe that they're victims. You've just gone from the victim to the oppressor.
Right.
Unless you accept that any man can be you, which I know has to send people's minds, even on the left, going, what do you mean?
Yeah, it is. And I guess that debate is always going to be there. But it will. My question is, will it be generational? No reason to believe at this point it is, but at some point in the LGBTQ community, they're going to have this very open discussion and have the debate, right? I mean, they're having it.
Not openly, though. It's not a massive debate.
But there, at some point, they will have to do that. I mean, they're going to have to deal with reality. Well, wait a minute. You can't deal with reality. Because what they're talking about here is you have certain members of the community saying, no. And essentially pointing to biology and reality. You don't want to do that. Ask our friend Ben Shapiro. You don't want to do it.
So there you go. We didn't think I'd be talking about tennis today.
Well, you know, we need to go back. I mean, we review the year in review, which we're not going to do this morning. But, you know, when people look back on the year, let's go back 2 years. We'll go back 2 years. The decade in review. We'll go back to 2008. 2016, right after the election, you and I said, okay, what do you have here? And the protesters and the splintering of the left. If you're part of some kind of activist group, well, expect at any moment that you're going to become the oppressor, because someone or a group of people are going to break off from your group now, and then they're going to point at you. We just pointed out that example. We just made that example, and we were right on that. I mean, that mentality is very much at play on the left. Doesn't matter what group you're in right now, what your cause is right now. Doesn't matter what you're an activist for or against right now. Tomorrow, you are likely going to be the oppressor.
Well, you know, the other thing it does to the Democrat Party and the left in general, one of what they believe their strong points are is that because they believe in climate change, that they are the party of science. You hear that on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
This blows that narrative out of the water, and they know it. That's mm-hmm. why they're quiet on it.
Right.
That's why, you know, you'll see Navratilova come out. There'll be a little bit of debate, but the media, the mainstream media, actually does not want to have that debate. Right. They don't want to have a major debate on that on CNN and MSNBC going on all the time. It's too uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because sure. They wish to claim that they're the party of science, and then when science smacks them right in the face, they just ignore it as if it's not there. Their only defense is to not let it become an issue until it does become an issue, when major figures of the left who supported the victimization of, quote, marginalized groups for years are now viewed as the oppressor.
Right.
Because eventually they're going to have to talk about it, because it's growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and they want more acceptance of mm-hmm. something that isn't scientifically true. And
right.
everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And so since they know it, and since it's so commonplace, their only defense is not to talk about it. That's why you don't see it as a big issue. You don't hear it being talked on the left. The only people
no.
bringing up the hypocrisy and the problems that the left is going to, you know, find comes out of this particular mindset is the tearing apart of different, quote, marginalized groups on the left when there becomes a new one, and then they looked at a former marginalized group and called you the oppressor. Because now Martina Navratilova is the oppressor.
You're going to see her on stage at the 2020 DNC? No. Not going to happen. I mean, you know, back in the day, oh, yeah. And I mean, by back in the day, 2008, yeah, sure. That could have happened. Not in 2020. Because you're not going to, and but then take away all, I guess, the personalities or anybody of note. The question becomes, okay, what do you promote? Well, you really can't promote anything. What do you do? Then what do you do? Think about where they've gone. Climate change and racism. Because the two things are, okay, you know, the threats in both of those are, it's clear what the threat is in racism, and the threat too with climate change is the world is coming to an end, and we're responsible, and only we can save it. That's why they've gone there, is because they can't have a discussion on the issues that day-to-day people deal with. They can't have a discussion on the economy. They can't have a discussion on a number of things. And as you just pointed out, they can't even have the discussion that others are having in their on their own political side against each other. So what do? You can go out and you can say, go out and promote a cause. Well, ask Bernie Sanders how that works out for you when you're at a rally. Your rally, not somebody else's rally. And you have to give up your podium.
Because you're viewed as the oppressor.
That's right. So
at your own rally.
So you can't promote anything, so you go back to the standards. Climate change and racism.
Right. And all the issues that are actually tearing apart your party and the liberal mindset aren't even allowed to be discussed.
You can't acknowledge them.
Because the discussion and debate of it.
Yes, because you have to pick a side. If you're
right,
politically speaking.
Right. And as soon as you pick the wrong side, you're marginalized and you can't be heard. Your freedom of speech doesn't matter anymore. You need to be kept quiet.
That's right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. It was a great day yesterday because I realized everything was done. Everything is complete.
Mm.
I was able to have a day of rest yesterday. Well, actually not a day of rest because it was a crazy news day, but it was just really cleaning the house. All my pre-Christmas visitation, all the banana bread, everything is done, and now it's a time to finish up here, and then
I'm
going to
be
holidays.
Sitting around all weekend, just hanging out. You know, we got great weather. Actually, I might get out.
Yeah, we do.
You know, and run around for no reason. Just walk to the park. I'm not going to walk to the park. Actually, my dog and I, we've got this a great park next to our house that she absolutely loves. We might have to get out there. We've had some really good weather here lately.
And by the way, I came in to the station. It was a crazy news day yesterday, but as I was coming in, I heard Christmas Rapping by Curtis Blow, and it put me in a good mood.
Okay.
It's a hilarious song. I mean, just hilarious. I hadn't heard it in a long time.
Yeah,
but it is a funny song. So it put me in a good mood, and it's interesting because I love all new music, but this is just probably in the last few years. I think it's when you get around 60 that all of a sudden music is just not what you love to hear, but it becomes nostalgia. And I can't believe the old-time Christmas songs that I heard as a kid that my parents played. Mm-hmm. I hear it on the radio. Oh, man, am I drawn in.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring back. I'm not one of those people that say, oh, I wish I could go back there. Not that. It's it's sweet nostalgia. It's like, wow.
It was interesting because my wife and her sisters and their husbands, we all got together. We met at a restaurant. We do that every year around Christmas time, and we have a dinner together. And in their family, it was a tradition every year to play the Buck Owens Christmas album. And still today they play it, and her mom still has it on vinyl for all the hipsters out there. And we were walking into this restaurant, and I don't know that I have heard Buck Owens play on the restaurant speaker in ever. It's just been ages since I had heard that, probably since he had hits on the radio. And as we walked in that restaurant that night, it was playing, and it was just great. And her sisters were there, and it was just terrific.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. I've been looking all over the place to see if anybody got a quote from actor Woody Harrelson. Remember him from Cheers?
Right.
Woody
on the Farm Bill. Yeah.
On the Farm Bill, because I think I became a talk show host in 89, so Cheers was still on.
Yeah.
And at that time, he was still promoting hemp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This got lost in everything this week, that in the Farm Bill post that was passed by Congress.
Mm-hmm. And signed by the president on Thursday.
Yep. It legalized hemp by removing it from the Controlled Substances Act while preserving the FDA's authority to regulate the product.
Which later in the day, the FDA announced they're going to consider allowing the sale of FDA or hemp-infused or CBD-infused, I should say, products on edibles, drinks and edibles on the market.
Now, it doesn't get you high.
No.
The CBD oil. This isn't the pot high.
No,
that you get.
No.
Now, why would they? Now, what is the? You were telling me the goal. You would put it in drinks and in
and
edibles.
Foods. Yeah,
and edibles because it
has
to help
anti-inflammation. Anti-inflammation. A property that a lot of people are praising right now, and therapeutic that people are praising, and it's not a drug. You had a lot of people standing against it, saying, well, no, because, you know, it is still in the cannabis family, and we don't want to move that way on the federal level, but that hurdle is done. In terms of the cultivation of it and the reclassification of it, now you have, and having the FDA considering, that was announced, that was breaking, they're basically talking about legalizing interstate sales of cannabis-based CBD in food and drinks. If that happens, imagine, I don't know, any of the energy drink companies now coming out with a different line, you know, that that would include CBD in their product.
But non-gluten.
Yeah. No, you can't. No, in fact, the FDA is considering outlawing gluten. But if you, because everyone knows it's horrible, even though we don't know what it is. But if you look at that move, the president, which, first of all, a very funny moment. About 15 minutes before the signing ceremony of the farm bill,
mm-hmm.
and this was missed because everything going on with the spending bill and the 5.7 and Ryan being at the White House and everything else. But the president tweeted out a video of himself and Megan Mullally. And they're singing the theme to Green Acres on stage. I think it was at the Emmys one year, but it was years ago. And he's dressed in overalls and a white T-shirt with a straw hat on, which you never see him outside of a suit. But he posted this on his Twitter account. We're going to sign the farm bill in 15 minutes. Join us. And then posted that video of them singing the theme to Green Acres. And it was pretty funny. Ben Shapiro tweeted about it and said he was, well, he put LMAO, so we all know what that means. But the farm bill really, I think, is about, because it does include aid for the farmer.
Yeah, which, again, the subsidies have gone through the roof.
Right.
They've liberalized who can get farm subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
It's expanded farm welfare, in my opinion,
right.
to the point that we never thought we would ever see even 10, 15 years ago. It's a bad bill.
Mm-hmm.
I know farmers will disagree. Of course they will. Anybody who gets a subsidy, mm-hmm. anybody who gets free stuff from government will always disagree when somebody criticizes a bill which expands the subsidies that the federal government hands out.
One of the things that countered that, which was interesting, is that they tightened the
yes.
qualifications, the work requirements related to food stamps or the SNAP program. And it got down to especially able-bodied individuals that don't have children. So if you're able-bodied and you don't have children, you don't have dependents, and you're applying, there will be a very strict requirement going forward as a result of this becoming law. We'll see where, again, that goes, because there was a lot of online. That was the protest, of course, from the left. Then beyond that, the other positive would be in the hemp production itself. You had a number of farmers, especially the smaller farmers in Texas and other states, that have been very vocal about it. And by the way, all those states have their own laws about hemp cultivation and everything else. I would expect many of those laws are going to change, especially from governors who support President Trump. But we'll see. But the idea is that you're opening up that huge industry development for those farmers who want to be a big part of that. And in fact, I was reading one farmer out in West Texas who was talking about it, saying that this is a massive, massive, massive opportunity. He's essentially been waiting at the door with other investors and farmers who want to take advantage of this, and this is going to be a lot of a growth in their business. So we'll see what where that goes. But if you see an FDA move on CBD oils and drinks and food products, being able to sell those on an interstate basis. And see, that's the difference, too. There are states that have their laws that are very open about it, and there's no issue with it, and you can have that. But the problem is if there's a federal level, I guess if there is a classification, especially with hemp, and then federal laws blocking the way. You can't have those interstate sales, which means you can't have those massive energy companies that are already established. And the point being is that imagine a company like a Red Bull or a Monster or any of them, you know, that are already have a place on the shelf and they come out with a new product. Imagine what that does at the farming level. Imagine what that does in terms of the demand domestically. That would boost farming in a very positive way. I don't have any numbers in front of me, but there are plenty of farmers right now that are willing to jump on board.
I was trying to see if they got a reaction from Jesse Greenslade, who's Surfer Dude. Remember Surfer Dude?
Oh, yeah. Right.
That went on Fox News. This is back in 2013, and he wouldn't work. He collected food stamps. Remember, he would go and get lobster and all that. And
right.
I was trying to find. I went on Google to see if he had commented, but on the new farm bill, but nothing on that. Mm. In sort of a related area, Governor Andrew Cuomo warned that New York can't get too greedy in taxing recreational marijuana.
Oh, interesting.
Because residents could then easily cross the border to get cheaper weed.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, was he talking about cigarettes or weed?
Weed.
Oh.
That's what recreational marijuana
is. So it doesn't apply, I know, but it doesn't apply to cigarettes? The cigarette tax in New York?
Oh, okay. No, we've talked about that. How many cigarettes? Well, what was the percentage just a few years ago of the number of cigarettes that came from out of state?
Right.
In there, Massachusetts imposes 20% taxes on pot sales, a 10.75% excise tax, 6.25% sales tax, and 3% local tax. New Jersey is still crafting their law. The governor of New Jersey initially sought 25%. Lawmakers want to cut it to 12%. I want to make sure that our framework is consistent with New Jersey and Massachusetts, Cuomo said. He said the price for pot can't be so much cheaper in neighboring states. You can't have a system where we drive people, pardon the pun, to New Jersey. And on the day that Mayor de Blasio unveiled his own views about legalizing weed, the governor made it clear the state was calling the shots. New York City can't legalize marijuana. Buffalo can't legalize marijuana. You need a state law. You need a state framework. No city or country can make a law that is applicable. Well, except for the, so you're against sanctuary cities then?
Right. Governor? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Does that mean you're against?
He must be, right?
Can there be a sanctuary weed city?
Well, I mean, if you don't want to cooperate with the feds on one issue, why would you want to cooperate with them on any issue?
Cuomo, for example, noted that some county officials opposed to pot legislation want to opt out of the program. The governor also shot down ideas to dedicate pot revenues to a specific cause, such as all mass transit. And it would be interesting because I know, now I don't know what the law is in New York, but I remember when I was in my 20s, and I did move to a county in New York, in central New York, that was dry.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't buy alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember how shocked I was at that point. Now, I still live in a partially dry city in the state of Texas.
I do, too.
We've often joked about the fact that they're on, you know, it went to medical marijuana and now recreational marijuana. And people said, what do you guys think about it? And I said, well, I can't even buy a bottle of vodka in my town.
Well, I'm still trying to get them to pass medical wine. And I've got studies to support it.
I want medical vodka.
Mm-hmm.
See, well, wow. Mm-hmm. I have to watch my blood sugar.
Yeah.
And so I'm always counting carbs.
Mm-hmm.
Vodka. I actually met a guy one time, and he was drinking vodka. And like diet something, whatever diet.
Okay.
And he's the one that told me, this goes back a couple of years ago, when I was first diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I have to watch my blood sugar. Don't worry, folks. I'm fine. Everything's cool. And he told me he was drinking vodka. He goes, no, you got to drink vodka all the time. Zero carbs.
Well, many of the alcohols have no carbs at all.
Actually, it was more of, you really got to drink, vodka. There's no carbs at all in it. It's healthy for you.
Now, I'm guessing all that flavored stuff that they've come out with in the recent years cotton candy flavored vodka or whatever has sugar in it. There's no way it doesn't, right?
I would assume
because it has to have a flavor syrup in it.
See that I've missed out on that
mm-hmm.
because the last 18 years living in a partially dry town, mm-hmm. I could imagine if there was a liquor store around the corner, I would have wanted to sample all the different flavors because they do sound good. Cotton candy, cream soda.
It was about a year ago that I went to one of the, and it's a big chain of liquor stores. And, you know, you walk in and it's like, okay, you know how grocery stores have, you know, okay, baking goods, flour, mm-hmm. sugar, and, you know,
right.
so you can see the big sign hanging over the aisle. They had huge signs hanging over their aisles, vodka, mixers, bourbon, so you could see where everything was. I thought, well, there's the selection. And I went into this one area, I forget what I was looking for, and I looked down, and it was one brand, but every flavor in the world. I mean, it was everything. And I was like, that's the expansion,
mm-hmm.
the upsell on, because you're trying to essentially, especially in that setting, you're trying to get more shelf space.
Well, I did tell you on my birthday weekend, I did do one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Fireball stuff.
Right. The cinnamon flavored.
It's whiskey. It's whiskey, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
All right.
I'm glad I'm not at 18. Well, we could drink when we were 18. I'm glad I'm not 18 anymore
mm-hmm.
with all those selections.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, when I was 18, we got drunk on stuff that tasted terrible.
Yeah.
And we liked it.
It tasted like you're drinking pure fuel. Someone actually gave me a sip of real moonshine one time. And yes, it was in the South. And this is about 5-7 years ago.
And?
It's like number two diesel. It may have been number two diesel. I'm not quite sure. But they had put the maraschino cherry. And I think they did it when they put it in the cup. I don't think it's put in the bottle. I don't know. They just brought me. It was in a cup. I know somebody who has since passed, but it was very, very famous. And one time I was on a tour bus with him, and he had it was actually a jar. I'm not going to say who it was, but he had a mason jar, and it was moonshine. And I didn't sip it. I didn't take a sip. I didn't have to. I could smell it.
So I'm assuming that the stuff, because I've seen moonshine, legal moonshine,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's the label of it. I'm
right,
assuming
right.
that doesn't taste like real moonshine.
See, I don't know. Cause
I've never had it.
Would that wouldn't be appealing. I'm telling you right now. It was, you talk about a burn. I mean, I had to go get an endoscopy so I can make sure that I still had an esophagus the next day.
I told you one time I had a very expensive cognac one time.
Oh, yeah? I don't think I've ever had cognac.
Very fancy restaurant.
Okay.
And I only had just a little bit. I mean, a tiny, but it was like $100 a glass.
Yeesh.
And the owner of the restaurant, it was complimentary, wanted to give it to me
because
I was doing commercials for them.
Right.
That was all I had to drink was that. And it was a great dinner. That was like 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
By 9 o'clock the next day when I was doing my radio show,
mm-hmm.
I remember burping and you could still
Yeesh.
Feel the fumes.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. It's like,
yeah.
That's
keep the fire extinguisher handy.
But $100 a glass. Like, well, I'm sorry. Nothing's worth $100 a glass.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. And as I told you to start the show off, I have everything done, and there's no greater feeling than getting everything done and there's still like 4 days before Christmas.
Yeah.
That's still, that to me, that's the greatest feeling. Well, you actually, know, 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. 5, really. So
what's great for me is that as a grandparent, that I'm not buying the same kind of toys that my kids, my children had. Like, I remember one night putting together this, you know, one of those basketball machines where you throw it, but it has the nets, so it rolls back down to a small basketball.
Yes, yes,
you know,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, and then it has the counter on it, the electronic counter. So you got that whole thing to deal with. Then you got the legs, and the legs have to be right. And then you put, you know, part A into slot C, but don't put a G into D, and where's that screw I just had, and what in the world is... Nope. With my grandkids, tablet, case for the phone, you know, a gift card to their favorite store.
Yeah.
Much easier.
Very, very simple these days.
For OmniTrax, here's your forecast.
Many areas in the east and along the eastern seaboard have already had a record amount of rainfall for the year, and we're going to tack on at least another couple inches with the system that's moving through that region for today and into the weekend. Those widespread showers will continue again today for most areas that saw the showers yesterday, east of the Mississippi, Indiana, Ohio, down through Kentucky, and into the lower Mississippi Valley. Heavy showers expected. Up and down the I-95 corridor, we'll see showers continue through at least Saturday morning from Washington, D.C. into Boston. And expect more snowfall for Idaho, the Northern Rockies, and Cascades. A record-breaking 112.5 million Americans will travel during this December holiday season. That's a 4.4% increase over last year, according to AAA, the highest number since they've been tracking holiday travel. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Have some eggnog. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So there I was, a youngin, and it was always dad's thing that the kids all went shopping on Christmas Eve. All right, so all of us kids, we went out shopping on Christmas Eve and
right, yeah.
went into the store. And this was SS Kresge store. Okay. So we all go in it.
Department store,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, department store, general kind of store, toys and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever little money we had from allowance or chores or whatever, because we were still pretty young at the time.
Yeah.
Weren't old enough really to work a job.
Right. Steal from neighbors, whatever you
steal from neighbors, right. I'm going to say steal from my father, and I realized that didn't happen until I was like probably 11.
Yeah.
Where my father kept money on the like quarters and stuff, and I would steal them, and he knew exactly,
yeah,
how much was being stolen the whole time.
And, oh yeah, my dad was a cop,
and set my brother and I up for that one when he caught us.
Mm-hmm.
But before I became evil,
you mean a talk show host?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought we were talking about stealing.
Pre-evil me. So there we are, and we go into the store, and I'm trying to find, you know, and I've got the whole thing was you get presents for, you know, your brother and your sister. So I had I had to get four gifts.
Sure.
My three sisters and my brother.
Right.
And so I think my sisters were easy. And I just couldn't figure out what to get for my brother. And I don't even remember what I got my brother. I just have no idea. I can't remember. But I remember what he got me, because he goes up, you know, and he immediately went in the store. It's like, you know, like a bullet. Boom. Goes in. Goes up to the counter.
He was already on it.
He's on it. He knew exactly what. Well, I think he also wanted it. I think it was a gift for me, but it was also a gift for him.
Right. Because I have a theory about this, but we'll explore that theory after you tell the story.
And so it's in the bag and everything else, and he is so excited. And on the way home, he's telling me, "You're just not going to believe what I got you. You're not going to believe what I got you. It's the best gift ever. The best gift possible. You're not going to believe it."
The excitement begins.
Oh, yeah.
Now again, what day was this?
This would have been Christmas Eve.
So this
Christmas Eve afternoon.
So the excitement has already, your body is almost trembling just because it's Christmas Eve. Oh. And now your brother delivers that little piece of candy.
I was already excited of what the possibility of Santa might bring to me.
Right, also
just
it's Christmas Eve.
Incredibly excited about what you know Santa might bring.
Right.
And then my brother's added that extra level of excitement.
Oh, man.
And then we're up in stairs and we're wrapping the presents.
Now, on the way home, after he said that, your mind is going a million miles an hour because you've been in that store before and you've seen a lot of things in that store.
And I couldn't figure out what did he get. I could not figure out what he got me. And so we're wrapping gifts, but he wrapped his in my parents' room, so I couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just wrapping the gifts, and he comes in with the wrapped gift, and he's just like smiling, goes, "You're not going to believe it. Come on, tell me what it is." He tortured me.
Oh, yeah, right.
All of Christmas Eve. Well, so eventually, after a couple of, shots of Fireball whiskey at 8 years old, I was able to get to sleep finally.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
it was allowed back then.
So I woke up the next morning and, it was just a, beeline right down to the tree. And I knew what his gift looked like. And I ripped it open. And I'm telling you, the joy that just enveloped my entire body. And I could not believe that my brother got me this. I never thought about it as a present before.
Right.
But when I saw what my brother got me, and realized that it was actually a working toy that you put it together, and then you could actually work it. I was so excited you just couldn't believe it. And when I realized that my brother got me a model French guillotine with a little plastic man, that laid on the guillotine with the detachable head. And the blade actually came all the way down. It was sort of like a simple type. Remember the game Mousetrap? The blade would come down, hit between the neck and the head, and yes, the head would plop into the basket.
Oh, my gosh.
Somehow we knew, though, even though this was the most incredible gift that I'd ever received for Christmas, better than a Red Ryder BB gun.
Yeah.
By the way, I love the memes that are out there this year, that Ralphie has grown beyond that in this day and age, and he's got an automatic.
Quite possibly.
See that meme? Yeah. I love that meme.
Yeah.
Time to upgrade. And so immediately we ran upstairs. Now, it's the only present we've opened up.
Mm.
And I'm up there. My sisters are up there. Everybody is fascinated with this gift. And so after playing with it for like about an hour, and I'm going to guess we were up at 6 o'clock. By this time, it's 7 o'clock.
Right, right, right.
And my brother's already called the neighbors. A couple of the neighborhood kids come over. They, throw on their galoshes and come across the street. So our bedroom is, full of my siblings and a couple of the neighbors. And we're all trying this little guillotine. We get bored with it, so we go down to the kitchen and, of course, and have to get some ketchup.
Sure.
I'm sure everybody knows what the ketchup was used for. To be more realistic at that point.
And to make it taste better.
And so, to add flavor.
Because guillotines, everybody knows you need to season them.
So apparently, I would guess what happened is my parents getting up at 7:30 and walking out, and it was the first Christmas ever where every single gift had not been unwrapped already, and there wasn't, wrapping paper all over the place. Everything was still neatly under the tree. So they suspected something was wrong. So my mother came upstairs, and we didn't hear her. She opens the door, and there we are with this guillotine and the ketchup, and ketchup's all over the place. And
the horror.
Oh, she just went, "What is this?"
Can you imagine being a mom it's Christmas morning and you're thinking, oh, we got to get the coffee on. The kids are probably sitting under the tree right now.
And no, deserted.
And she walks out. Okay, something's very wrong. Very wrong.
She called my father, John!
Opens the door. The Christmas Day guillotine slaughter lies before her. The heads of your foes lay on the floor, fallen as enemies that will be no longer.
And
yeah.
And so we had to clean it all up, put it back in the box.
Well, okay.
And we could not play with it. And my brother, we had to return it the next day. So
yeah.
I think I traded it in. We were able to trade it in, and I got, I think, a Vietnam air attack helicopter instead.
Well, that takes it down a notch.
Yeah, just a notch.
Yeah.
And there's the story of Gary's best Christmas present ever. A Christmas story.
Now my best Christmas present ever was a Fender Strat copy that my parents ordered out of Sears and Roebuck catalog. For those under the age of 80, a catalog was essentially like a magazine. For those under the age of 60, a magazine is a paper version of an online website. So I begged my parents for this guitar. Now, this thing was expensive at the time. I think it was about $100 at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Family of five, one income, military family. And I ended up getting that guitar. And the rest is history. Mick Jagger can fill in the rest. But one of the most memorable Christmas gifts, and I'm going to give you a visual here because I pulled it up on Google Maps and I went to Street View. This is the house here on Adams Hill Drive in San Antonio, Texas.
That's where you lived?
That's where we lived.
Okay, cool.
Now, this room right here on the right, or this window right here on the right.
I can see it, yeah.
That's my room. Now, the room on the left, or the window on the left, closest to the porch here, that's my sister's room. She got her own room, right? So there's three bedrooms.
All right.
My parents, this is a brand new house when we moved in. $16,000 my parents paid for that house. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
So here's this room. I'm in this room with my three older brothers, two sets of bunk beds. Okay.
I know where this is
going.
Yeah,
we're piled in, and I'm on the bottom bunk, closest to the door. I know what you're saying. I was the youngest. How did I get a bottom bunk?
Right. Yeah.
I am the world's greatest negotiator. And so, I'm sitting in this room all night long because I'd been asking for the Evel Knievel action figure with the launching pad and ramp and whole thing. Okay? Now, you can see, as we look at it now, it's a very small, it looks like a very small house. It's a very modest home. I don't even know what the square footage is, but it's a very modest home. All right? And that's that. I would start my day there and every morning and walk my way up to Adams Hill Elementary. The first year I went to school, John Glenn Elementary, which was even closer, but I don't know. They had to add a school. Now, can you see this backyard compared to the house?
Yes.
You see how big that is?
Yeah.
That's a big backyard.
Yeah, we had a very small house, the huge backyard,
right,
too.
So, but what we can't see from this photo here, at least the vantage point that I have it, I could probably turn it around, but basically just a cement slab for the porch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but it was all open yard, no trees, nothing, because it's a brand new house. In other words, I wanted my Evel Knievel to jump this huge backyard. I was really going for the neighbor's fence. I thought I was going to set a world record. Well, the first try, it didn't happen. And then I thought, okay, my expectations are essentially tempered at that point. I realized the limitations of my equipment at hand, except for the fact that I also realized, what would Evel Knievel do? Or WWEKD, kind of my, go-to question in that moment. Well, he was all about the showmanship. And he wore a cape. The guy wore a cape. So my action figure had a cape. I'm thinking to myself, what would evil do? Well, he would make it flashier. He has fireworks. Well, I don't have any of those. And I wouldn't have them until around the 1st. You know, back then we used to do fireworks on the 1st of January. Didn't have any fireworks, anything else. Closest thing to it, a huge box of matches in the kitchen. So what I decided I was going to do is I was going to go in there and I'm going to grab that huge box of matches, because there's no parental supervision at that point because I've escaped the eyes of my parents. And I go back outside and I attempt 3 times to light that cape on fire. Now, look, I did not have a backstage crew. I did not have a pyrotechnics crew. I did not have any of that. It was just me. Each time I attempted to do that, the cape just melted because, well, it was fire retardant in nature and didn't work. So then by the end of the day, I had this burnt clump on his back, and he didn't go any further.
Did you ever get the baking soda and vinegar rockets?
No, I got the volcano thing, though.
Okay, yeah.
I did the volcano thing, though.
We use those as weapons, too.
Yeah, right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, so there are our Christmas stories. There's our Christmas stories.
Yeah, I always loved it. For me, honestly, you know, having 4 siblings, it was great. And honestly, my favorite place to be on Christmas morning is exactly where I'll be with my kids and grandkids in my home, and all of us will be spending time with each other, and we'll all be very sleepy. Drinking a little coffee, smelling the food cooking, and, you know, it's just the classic, I think, American Christmas morning setting. And for me, it has everything to do with the fact that I know that there's going to be zero disturbances, you know, for that day. Nobody is going to be calling us. Mm-hmm. God willing, there's no emergency, but I mean, it's a rare day when even a phone rings.
By the way, the worst Christmas present ever was another one I was most excited about was electric football. And we all remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody who's around our age, electric football, and you were so excited because they did tons of TV commercials.
And the air hockey thing became a thing.
Well, yeah, but the football was very disappointing because the players just kept going around in circles.
I'm telling you.
You could never control those players.
I tried to develop my team. I did.
Impossible.
I worked with trainers. I hired a defensive coach who was top of the league, still went around in circles.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.